When I got to Birmingham University, as I said, the first years had to be shared, but I got lectures from a brilliant lecturer, not a very pleasant man, but brilliant lecturer in genetics. And I decided when he asked me to go into the first year in genetics there, which would be the third year at the university. Mm. I took some time, then I said yes. And eventually I graduated with first class honours in genetics.
And you got first class honours, and I believe that was the first degree in single genetics.
First. The others got two, as far as I remember. This was a relatively small class, but mainly second. I don't remember what everybody... There was no other first. There was no other first that year in the whole biological sciences. So that was botany, zoology at that time, and genetics. I was the only one. The year before, there were two firsts, but not genetics. They were... As far as I remember, both in zoology, or one in zoology, one in botany. Firsts were very hard to get in those days.
Very rare. And you decided then to go into academic
I was offered
work.
Then to, and again there had to be an interview, I was offered to do a PhD in the Birmingham University with Martha or that small group of lecturing staff there, and had to go to London to be interviewed, and I got an Agricultural Research Council scholarship, which was as good as you can get it. That was £300 a year. Tax-free. I'm mentioning this to you because actually later on I had a letter from the inspector of taxes saying, why had I not registered? And I said, my award is tax-free. We had several letters going which ended up from the inspector of taxes. It appears that your ARC grant is tax-free. No apology or anything.
Sorry, say the name of the grant, the type of grant. The grant was called the...
ARC's Agricultural Research Council.
Right,
research,
okay.
Studentship.
And did that mean that you had to specialise in one particular area?
Oh, yes. I had to do it with Martha and Rhys... and a couple of other people. But I was really not much supervised. But that's beside the point. You can see my PhD thesis if you want it.
And what was it on? What was your subject?
I specialized. I managed to isolate... unusual Aspergillus is a fungus from the top of a Marsala bottle cork. And it turned out to be very interesting, and I developed that. So really, I could have stayed in that subject if I wanted to. But at the same time, I had my own problem there, but at the same time the problem I was given is to investigate heterothallism in wild Aspergillus. That was an interest in the place, and I did that too. So I had two parts of the thesis. My prof said at the time that I was gilding the lily, whatever that means, but it really hooked me onto research. The fact that I didn't have a supervisor. I had a supervisor nominally, but he was on a external leave in Scandinavia with Winger. Winger was a kind of yeast pathologist, so I really had no supervision.
And thereafter, what happened, John? Where did you go next?
Let me try and say this. I had a number of, once I got my PhD, no, before I got my PhD, I was attracted by one of the competitors, so I still was writing it up, and the competitor was in Glasgow. So I went after 2 years in Birmingham with no supervision. I went to Glasgow with no supervision, but I was now an assistant, really assistant lecturer, but it was called as, with Pontecorvo here in Glasgow. And I wrote up, I was married in after the first year of my PhD work, still in Birmingham. I was to Barbara. We've just had our 60th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
I'll show you. We're headed in the teeth of opposition from her mother.
She didn't approve of you, did she?
I was a refugee, a Jew, penniless, as far as they were very... very poor, and she didn't. You can ask Barbara, she'll give you an even better description. However, it worked out okay. We were saying, after 2 years, we came to Glasgow. Barbara worked in the, she was a nurse. And Barbara worked in the Queen Mother's, mm-hmm. I think, for a short time. Then we had, at the very end, while I was finishing my PhD thesis and to submit it to Birmingham, of course, we had our first child, our eldest child. And so he was born just before we left again from here, and I dipped his foot into Loch Lomond, just
true Scot.
to remind him where he was. I went into Perth. I was given the opportunity to become something new for them, a geneticist in Pirbright, mm-hmm. and this is where I switched to viruses, mm-hmm. and worked on foot and mouth disease virus. And I worked in Pirbright. I had an assistant and started genetics of FMDV, foot and mouth disease virus. Do you want me to go on or not?
Yes, please.
So, well, I was in Pirbright. We had a house, mm-hmm. there that was provided. When we came in, it was a brand new house, and there were 7 different leaks from from. But they had an organization to put that right. And I worked there, let me try and see, mainly foot and mouth, but I became a senior worker there. I became one of the senior, we were called research officers, mm-hmm. and so on. And then I'll make it quick because it's, as I said, I started in genetic section. Then Michael Stoker, who has just died, asked me to come up from Pere Brandt to give a lecture to his staff, his new staff. He had just started virology here in Glasgow. He was good friends with Pontecorvo, mm-hmm. and it's quite clear to me that Pontecorvo, who was a wonderful person as a person and a very good scientist, had obviously recommended this, because I had the flu when I came up and I gave this lecture streaming, and he, Stoker, then asked me to come to his office, which he did, and he said he won't beat about the bush. He was wanting to offer me a position there immediately. I said, that's impossible. I said, I have just obtained a visiting scientist of a professorship, I think it was visiting scientist, it was called, position for the next 6 months with Renato Dal Becco. Dal Becco won the Nobel Prize subsequently, and not thanks to me, but thanks to his work in California, at California Institute of Technology. And I had a grant to it, so that was okay. And Stoker said, that's okay, you'll have this as a sort of sabbatical leave before you even start. I don't remember his exact words, but he obviously wanted me there, and the MRC will take over the grant from the ARC itself. The grateful people in Pere Brandt, I was just about to be promoted, stopped that promotion in Pere Brandt again, but asked me to appoint a replacement for myself. So I appointed the next Jeanette. It's so funny, it's unbelievable. But you don't want
to. So who did you appoint then?
Pringle.
Ah, right.
Craig Pringle. And Craig Pringle eventually... Do you know...
My husband's talked about Craig Pringle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I appointed Craig Pringle.
So when you came back from Caltech...
When I appointed, I recommended it. Mm-hmm. That was the only recommendation.
And then, so you were 6 months in Caltech, and then you came back to Glasgow.
Yes, it may have been slightly longer than 6 months. It was more, it may have been up to 8 months. I came back, but I was poor. I was still on a British grant in America at that time, which was not very good. And I sent back Barbara and the children. But at that time we had just two, to Pere Brandt, where we had been before, until I would come back. And so I came. When Dal Becco found out how poor we really were, he suddenly got me an extra $500, which was quite a bit per month. But then Barbara just left, so left at the point. And then I came to Michael Stoker. I did not go to the university. I went to the virology unit. He was both professor of virology and director of the MRC unit. So I was now in MRC from ARC, mm-hmm. Agricultural Research Council.
To the Medical Research.
Medical mm-hmm. Research Council. and the work went pretty reasonable here. And then it's, but I was MRC, and then I had made a couple of discoveries which are relevant at the moment. But well, I won't go into that. And I was asked whether I would like to come to Siegmüller to do some of the work. This was with cells rather than anything else, and come as a sort of visiting professor at that time. It wasn't really a visiting professor, but it was really doing research at NIH, that is the National Institute of Health in Bethesda. And I then came, and then Stoker, I was out, I had gone out there to do this, because when Michael Stoker was resigning and was retiring to do into the ICRF, there were four senior scientists, of which I was one, who did not know what was going to happen. And there were so many rumors, and what Stoker offered all of these a position there, and I have a letter still somewhere here. He was very good, really. And I would have gone to him.
And where was that, sorry?
This was in 1968.
And where was he?
Oh, he was here. He was still, but he had accepted, he had accepted the position of, in London. Become research director in the Imperial Cancer Research Fund, ICRF. He offered me that position, and it would have been a good position. Earlier, he had been offered a chair in Oxford, and when he was offered that, he consulted us, but we would not have the laboratory facilities were very limited, so we would not have had much advantage of going, of uprooting, going there without that. And we, none of us, or I can't speak for all the others, but probably did not feel that they could go accept this place, though. So he refused the Oxford one, and then accepted the ICRF one. This time, of course, he could offer us a lot more laboratory space, and the others really, Crawford and McPherson, went with him, and stayed there. And I suddenly got him. I went out to Siegmüller, and then I had a call. Principal of the university would like to interview me. But don't forget, I was not a university. So I came back. And strangely enough, as soon as I came back, Barbara can tell you that, there was this was in December, just after Christmas, just then, there was a letter, or she had a information. I don't know if it was a letter or not, saying the interview is off. But I arrived to get that information. So I just went to bed after flying the Atlantic and so on, been at last with my family. And then a few days later, the interview was on again, and I was offered the position of that Stoker had. In other words, the position of now full professor in the university, responsible for the department, and more important, really, the director of the whole Institute of Virology, which included the MRC Virology Unit, which was a big research institute by then, in a building, believe it or not, that building had been built by the same person that built the Coventry Cathedral, the architect. Anyway, I'm reminiscing, yeah, and I shouldn't do that. But that's how it came.
Yes.
And then I was stuck.
Right.
And I held that position until I retired in 94, from 68 to 94.
So tell Claire and I a little bit as well about the SIBA medal. Because I don't think we kind of noted it down properly last time. So the SIBA award...
It's strange.
We have a photograph of it.
You've got the photograph, okay. It was just for the various bits of research, mm-hmm. or research thing that I'd done and established. There's also something else which I almost feel should not have been done. Not this evening. This was the International Herpes Virology Commission instituted a lecture which is in my name, but that shouldn't have been done till I was safely dead.
No, I don't think so.
It's nice you know about it. Hmm? It's good that you know about it.
Well, you couldn't help know it, because this is an annual thing. And as far as I know, until at least a year ago or so, there was still enough money to have it. So it was, it's been going for a long time. They just appoint somebody. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to do with it anymore. And they gave me a golden whistle. Did the Barbara tell you that?
I thought that was wonderful. But I was going to ask, is a lecture held in the same place every year?
No, in different mm-hmm. places. Wherever the international meeting takes place, mm-hmm. during my time, mm-hmm. I ran these meetings in several places. One of them in Cambridge. Another one in Edinburgh. Most of them are in other places, either in Italy or France, mm-hmm. and in the States, mm-hmm. quite a lot of them in the States. So I've become reasonably accepted.
I think highly accepted.
And your golden whistle, what was that representing?
I was astonished. When I retired, you haven't seen it, have you?
No. Show it to us afterwards. Tell us about it first.
I can't tell you anything except that I was so astonished to get it. So I tried it, and it works.
And it was from your research in herpes,
from the international community. Strangely enough, that's the first time, as far as I know, that this was done. But it says from the international community, but they didn't put my name on it.
Well, you better not lose it then.
Well, I can certainly no. No, I. It was astonishing. They also supported a visit by Barbara had been very ill at that mm-hmm. time. We had a ship's tour to Alaska from it. The last meeting that I while this was done was in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
and to Alaska. That's the only time I've been to Alaska. It was quite nice, and it was in a cruise ship. Simply and solely because Barbara was not very well, and it was very important that there would be mm-hmm. a doctor there, and she didn't need it as it is. And so we, at different places where we stopped, we flew on to Glacier. The sort of life that I never enjoyed and didn't know quite how to handle it, but it was okay.
Now, I better say this is
Barbara,
John's wife.
Barbara.
Right. So the two boys were at two different technical colleges trying to get their exams, and I was at Birmingham Technical College. John was at Aston, which eventually became the University of Aston. And it turned out that I was sitting with, I can remember an Irish girl, I can't remember what her name was at all. I was sitting with this girl, and it appears we were chatting. She was very talkative, and it turned out John was sitting
trying to read calculus, actually, and remember the book itself, Calculus Made Easy by Sylvanus P. Thompson, and two girls came in, and they were chatting continuously. They sat behind me, you know, it wasn't very full, and so eventually I turned around and said, for God's sake, shut up. That's how I met my wife.
That's an unusual chat-up line,
that's
I think.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
Well, it wasn't a very long... We weren't going out
very
long. We were married...
Several years later.
In August 22nd, 1953, which means 57 years we've been married.
Yep.
My mother disapproved very much. I married a student. I married a Jew. And I married a foreigner. Now, what on earth worse could you possibly do?
Mm. The opportunity came to try to get a job as a geneticist and so on. And I was encouraged to apply from different places. There were actually three different places. The first of these would have been in the West Indies, and your wife would have a servant at that time and all sorts of things like that. And the man who interviewed me had been a colonel in the past, and I was, of course, very delighted not to have anything to do with the army anymore. And then he suddenly looked at my CV and said, I see you were in the army. I admitted that that was so. Parachute regiment? Okay. You spent 3 years in this. What do you think of this army thing? I said, after the first year, when one got through all sorts of interesting problems, it was a sheer waste of time. And you don't say that to a colonel normally. So the West Indies, we were not that interested. The second was in Sheffield, and the third was in Glasgow. When I went to Sheffield for interview, it was a dreadful day, thick fog, and I looked at it, and there were grey tulips. They were yellow, actually, but that I wasn't really too keen on Sheffield at all. However, there was no problem with the interview. But then I went to Glasgow, and here was Pontecorvo. Guido Pontecorvo was that time reader, and the type of research I was doing was in fungi at that time. And his department was mainly interested also in fungal genetics. He worked on a slightly different organism than the one I had, and he had done an enormous amount of work, but I was the only one who was working on my system and it'd gone well. Anyway, I got the job, and Ponte was a friend ever since, really, although I only spent 2 years with Ponte, and then went to, it was recommended at the time when I got my PhD that I should start the genetic sections in Pirbright, which was foot and mouth disease research institute, and I went to Pirbright in Surrey.
How long were you looking at foot and mouth?
I was working in the foot and mouth disease from 56. I left from Ponte Cove, who was genetics in Glasgow. I went to Pirbright. And I was there for about 4.5 years. I went then for a relatively, okay, I went from there to California, to the California Institute of Technology, to work with Renato Dalbecco, who since then, he was a wonderful man to work with, but he got the Nobel Prize later. But it's not relevant, except it shows you there was some quality there. And before, when I still was in the Foot and Mouth Institute, because Michael Stoker, my predecessor, led, and Ponte Corvo were very friendly and working together, Ponte must have told him that if he wanted a geneticist, that this was probably it. And I was offered a position there. I said, I am now committed to go to California for a while. He said, well, you can start like on that as a sabbatical. So I had a sabbatical before I ever worked for the MRC.